When they had come near Jerusalem and had reached Bethphage at the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go into the village ahead of you, and immediately you will find a donkey tied and a colt with her. Untie them and bring them to me. If anyone says anything to you, just say this, 'The Lord needs them,' and he will send them immediately." This took place to fulfill what had been spoken through the prophet, saying, "Tell the daughter of Zion, look, your king is coming to you, humble, and mounted on a donkey, and on a colt, the foal of a donkey." The disciples went and did as Jesus had directed them. They brought the donkey and the colt and put their cloaks on them, and he sat on them. A very large crowd spread their cloaks on the road, and others cut branches from the trees and spread them on the road. The crowds that went ahead of him and that followed were shouting, "Hosanna to the Son of David! Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord! Hosanna in the highest heaven!" When he entered Jerusalem, the whole city was in a turmoil, asking, "Who is this?" The crowds were saying, "This is the prophet Jesus from Nazareth in Galilee." In a Bible study on this passage, a woman suddenly exclaimed, "Wait, that can't be right." The teacher paused. Everybody turned toward her as she quickly flipped through the pages of her study Bible. One friend said, "Why, what's up?" And she said, "Were there really two donkeys on Palm Sunday?" With that, everybody took a closer look at the Gospel of Matthew. There's nothing like the Bible to get you to take a closer look at the Bible. Matthew says they brought the donkey and the colt. They put their cloaks on them. Jesus sat on them, two donkeys, not one. Them? Two donkeys on Palm Sunday? The teacher lost control as the people around the table began to thumb through their Bibles. One of them said, "Where else are the stories of Palm Sunday?" Somebody said, "Well, here's one, Mark chapter 11. It only mentions one donkey, and it's the colt, the little donkey." Another said, "Well, that's what it says in the 19th chapter of Luke, too. It's a colt. That's like a foal, right?" "Well, I'm looking at the Gospel of John," said somebody else. "Here it is, chapter 12. Jesus has dinner with Mary and Martha, along with Lazarus, whom he raised from the dead. And the next day he finds a young donkey." That's what it says in the Gospel of John, one donkey, and it's young. With that, all the heads snapped back to look at the study leader. One of the people said it. "What's up with the Gospel of Matthew? Why does he say two donkeys when the others say one? Did he make a mistake?" The teacher said, "Well, you've talked about three accounts of Palm Sunday, but there's one more. Zechariah 9, verses 9 to 17. One of them said, "Where's that?" And the teacher said, "Well, it's right before the Gospel of Matthew, the next to last book of the Old Testament. And they found where it was written, 'Rejoice greatly, O daughter Zion, shout aloud, O daughter Jerusalem. Lo, your king comes to you, triumphant and victorious is he, humble and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey.'" Someone said, "Oh, so like this is a prediction. Someday the king will come and he'll ride a donkey." The teacher said, "Well, not quite. It's not a prediction as much as a fulfillment. The prophet Zechariah was speaking in the present tense. Rejoice, the king comes. He already believed the king could be present in some way. And then 600 years later, Jesus comes and chooses to ride a donkey into the city of Jerusalem. No doubt he knew that verse. He was intentional about how and who he would ride, and it was that kind of king." "Wait," said another one. "Zechariah said, 'On a donkey, on a colt, a foal of a donkey.' Are there three animals? Or maybe there are two animals after all." "Well, don't be ridiculous," another said. "Jesus is not some circus rider. straddling two animals at once. So everybody looked back at the teacher, and he was smiling. He said, "Let me tell you a little bit about Jewish poetry. It often uses parallelism, that is, an intentional echo, to let the thought sink in. This happens a lot in the Psalms. Sometimes it also happens in the prophets, if they're feeling a little poetic. Zechariah is speaking of one animal, not two. And my opinion is that Matthew is so excited that Jesus is coming to town that he jumps past the nuances of Jewish poetry to say that Jesus is choosing to be Zechariah's kind of king. He's triumphant and victorious, and he is humble." By this point, the teacher had them all in the palm of his hand, so he kept going. Let's look at what kind of king Zechariah could imagine, could dream of. "This king will cut off the chariot and the war horse. He shall command peace to the nations. His dominion shall be from sea to sea. This king will save the flock of his people. And in a wonderful line, he shall return the prisoners of hope." It was quiet for a moment. And then somebody said, "We still need a king like that." Well, certainly we do, especially when we have nations gassing their own people and missiles exploding on air bases. The world is still in a mess. And one primary reason for the mess is that a lot of people are hell-bent on having the kind of leaders who swagger around and brag of their strength rather than the humble king whose primary weapons are the words of truth, the deeds of healing, the establishment of fairness, and the practice of kindness. Welcome to Holy Week. This is the week when we feel the awkward clash between power and humility, when we sense the distance between telling the truth and getting our own way. "A very large crowd was there," says Matthew. "They went out to see the Lord, singing their Passover psalms of deliverance and freedom. And they pinned their hopes on this man who has healed their diseases, who has confronted public hypocrisy. Jesus has taught of the higher righteousness of the ways of God, and he has punctured the puffed-up pride of those pretending to speak for God." The people in the crowd really want him. They really need him. And by the end of the week, they will push him out of the world and onto a cross. In a nutshell, this is our human condition. Welcome to Holy Week. But this Palm Sunday, we can come with the words of Zechariah defining us, that we would be the prisoners of hope. It's a wonderful phrase, isn't it? It's also a title of a memoir by two recent Christian missionaries, Dana Curry and Heather Mercer. After hearing about Jesus, they volunteered as aid workers in Afghanistan in 2001, their primary desire being to serve the poorest of the poor. Talk about entering an antagonistic city. They were imprisoned by the Taliban, threatened, and imprisoned and held for 100 days. But here is what Heather said about her sense of God's calling. "I was not confident I had much to offer a devastated nation like Afghanistan. I had no experience to qualify me. In prayer, I felt God ask me if I could do just three things. Can you love your neighbor? Can you serve the poor? Can you weep as I weep for poor and broken people?" I came to see God didn't need someone with extraordinary gifts and achievements. God needed someone who could love, share life, and feel for others as God does. He was looking for faithfulness, not fame. Christians are prisoners of hope, this kind of hope. We're captives to a greater calling and a deeper service. We are held by the gospel and claimed by God to serve in a world that still resists the grace and justice that Jesus brings. In spite of living in a world of cruelty, nevertheless, we persist because we have seen Jesus come into town and we have seen him just as he is, triumphant, victorious, and humble. And we will see him again. Oh, yes, we will see him again.